welcome to the Heart Who's Call with Tara and Rama on Friday night on DBS Radio and on the conference call. This is Rainbird, Carolyn, and I'm opening the call tonight and giving the update, doing housekeeping as well. So let's just take a few centering breaths and clear that space to go into that heart space and go to that inside place and connect with your guides, connect with your ancestors. Breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth. Three gentle breaths or whatever breathing exercise that you choose to work with. And let's call in those seven sacred directions and do our prayers in that way. And all you good gatekeepers of the East, come look this way. Join us here at this round table, this Rainbow Rose round table. We're grateful for that illumination that comes with you, rising sun. Thank you. Great central sun. Thank you for your love, your support, all that you bring us each day in those rays. Thank you for not discriminating in any way. It's for all of us to receive. So thank you for that abundance of love like that. And thank you, Eagle and Condor, tying us to the sky that way. Thank you for that eagle vision. That vision that sees no borders and sees that we are all one. Teaches that in a good way and holds that prayer of Nisara in our lives, in our present now moment, bringing in that divine governance. So much gratitude. Much gratitude to all you good ones of the East. Thank you for these new beginnings, this new day, a new way to show up in our lives. So much gratitude, I hope. And all you good wisdom keepers of the North, come, look this way. Thank you for that truth-telling, that cold heart truth. We're so grateful for all the knowledge and all the ways that we can work with that knowledge, all the ways that you midwife us as we let go of what no longer serves us. Work from that higher place. And thank you for all of our teachers and all of our teachers' teachers and all of our teachers' teachers' teachers. Thank you. Elk, moose, showing us how to walk in grace. Thank you to that white buffalo calf woman for bringing that pipe ceremony, that way of doing prayers that works in such profound ways. So what a gift. Thank you for that peace that comes with these prayers.
So thank you, all you good beings of the North. Thank you for joining us here tonight and assisting us in our lives on a daily basis. All you good gatekeepers of the West, come join us here as we circle around this rainbow round table and do that inaugural work and do that dream time work. Thank you, setting sun. Thank you, nighttime. Thank you, death. Letting go of what no longer serves us. Allowing us to be born again. in a new now, in that 0 point place. So thank you, all you good wisdom seekers of the West. Thank you, Bear. Thank you, Jaguar.
Thank you, Horse. Reminding us all the ways we stand in our power.
But thank you for that good ride in the novel on the back of that Jaguar. We're grateful for that. That way of traveling through that dark rift. So, through that darkness like that. And thank you for the magic that comes with it. So thank you, all you good gatekeepers on the West. Thank you for joining us here as we do our work. And all you good ones in the South, come. Come join us here. All you little critters.
Rainbird?
What?
We can't hear you. You're all muffled. So can you improve that on your end?
Okay. Is this better? I think my...
Much better.
Okay. My headset did something funny. I'm sorry. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
So, So all you good South beings, thank you for joining us here. Thank you for corn. And see things from that place. And thank you for Coyote for reminding us not to take ourselves so seriously and laugh. And all these good ones of the plant healing ones of the South, and all these children playing and laughter and being as a child. Remembering that innocence and that trust and intuition, telepathy that comes from the South. So thank you, all you good ones of the South. Thank you for joining us here tonight. And Sky Nation, come, look this way. We're grateful for all of your lives. Thank you to that great central sun and all of that love that you bring us in these changes at this time and that those ways of going to that higher level. Thank you, Helios and Vesta and Sol, that sun and that moon and all the planets in our solar system and all the solar systems and all the galaxies of Nebadon. Thank you. Thank you for showing up in your lives. Thank you for shining on us as we show up in our lives. So thank you, all you good star beings, and all you good rain. Thank you for keeping the fires at bay and watering those plants so that they can grow. And thank you, lightning, for charging that earth in those special ways with that good lightning strikes and lighting clear thinking and awakenings. So thank you, all the Sky Nations, for all that you do in our lives. And Mother Earth, come. Thank you, thank you, thank you for letting us ride on your back. Thank you for blessing our hands and our feet. Thank you for blessing our lives in so many ways. We're so grateful for all of your beauty, all of your kingdoms, all of your creatures, the two-legged and the four-legged and the creepy crawlies and the swimmers and the skimmers. And the flying ones. So thank you. Thank you for all of those other kingdoms, the rock nation, and the tall standing nation, tree nation, and all those healing plants and gems and energies. And thank you for all the elementals and all that they do. So thank you, Mother, for your many gifts and your immense love. And Ho'oponopono. 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 We love you so much, Aho. And ancestors from seven generations back and seven generations forward, come join us here as we gather here tonight and look at this hard news and look at where we're at with where we are now in this big shift of the ages. And we know it takes all of our hearts from seven generations back and beyond and forward as well. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your lives and your participation at the time on that good blue run. Thank you for joining us here tonight. A whole. Thank you for all these seven sacred directions in all of our lives and all the ways that we show up in our lives. And for all the good work we do here and imagining and bringing forth the highest and best we know in our lives and without limitation for what we don't know, and manifest at this time the highest good that we can in divine governance and divine lifestyle, divine selves and our own divinity, and how we can be on that good red road and be sacred human beings. And so thank you for all of your lives. Thank you for showing up in your lives. And thank you for all the ways that you are sacred human beings. And so that brings up this topic of the housekeeping. And so I'll continue on with that venue and talk about what we need as a listener support radio program. We ask each of us, ourselves, to send in a donation on a regular basis as we have regular bills. It's $300 a week, and this week we owe $380, so we're doing well. We're keeping up and only a little behind, and it just requires all of us. It's not really a requirement. It's really an opportunity to make a difference in your life. And to make your commitment this way, and knowing that in the work that we do, we're archiving and discussing and documenting a refreshingly truthful narrative, potentiality of bringing this era, bringing in the changes, bringing in divine solutions, bringing in a higher spirituality for ourselves and our brothers and sisters, neighbors and families, and all that this entails by stepping in our through our own lives and the way we walk our talk. So this is one way we can walk our talk in sending a gift for these shows. And the way you can send a gift directly to BBS Radio so that no bank fees are taken out. It's just the cost of the stamp. And so you do that by mailing it to BBS Network, Inc. And that street address is 5167 Toyon Lane, Toyon. And that's in Paradise, California. 95969. And write "Attention Don" on the envelope and just send whatever is in your heart to send. And make a note that it's for Tara and Rama and Marita's show. And then that'll work in a good way. And another way you can make a donation is by going to their website, bbsradio.com, click on Radio Station 2, and then you can make a donation there as you look for the icon for each of the shows, the Hard News Call, or the Galactic History and History and the Sarah Call, or the Stargate Roundtable Call. Any one of those icons will work. And with much gratitude that you gift, and watch the blessings come your way as it really magnifies as we pay it forward like that. So, and many blessings on your life and lives. And then a way to send something to Tara and Rama You can go to the website, and that website is 2013rainbowroundtable.ning, ning.com. Click on the tab on the homepage for donations, or the tab placed just above the blog section for those donations. That's Rama's PayPal account. And that'll take you, you can make a memo if you want to put some for the radio and some for them or whatever. So that's a good way to gift money as well. And I know that as we gift, we receive, and I also know that there's no limit to what we can do at this time. I feel like Nisar is already happening in our hearts and in our intentions, and to claim that for ourselves, and to not be in a place of waiting, or but be in a place of taking action as if it already has been announced, because I feel as if it's time now to begin all, do what we do. So much gratitude for all of your lives. The address for Tara and Rama is Ram D. Berkowitz, RamDBerkowitz, and that's it, 1704B, Llano Street, LLANO, number 249. That's in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and the zip code there is 87505. You can make a phone connection to Marita Roberts, and that number 317-773-0061. And as you're sending something to Tara and Rama, if you could send them an email, that's helpful. That email address is Koran, K-O-R-A-N, 999 at Comcast.net. And I think that's all the information that you need. All those different ways will get there. So thank you so much for your lives, and thanks for joining us here, and thanks for your gifts. And 13, thank you, and honey in the hearts, I cast this talking stick to you, Tara and Rama. Greetings.
Greetings and well met. We got a beeping horn in the parking lot. I don't know whose that is. I guess you could shut the door so it's not so noisy. Hello, everybody. And I don't know about you, but I can certainly feel the energy that is coming in very strongly now. We're in the new dispensation, as Rainbird's alluding to, as everybody has been saying in the updates up on the internet. And it's a galactic fifth dimensional environment. That's where we are.
Yes, we are in 5D, and that 4D, 3D is fading away, and there are wisps of clouds of the old energies that are still creating a bit of, I could say, some downpours of weird energy that's not in alignment with what is moving onward and upward. And it's like all the strange things that are going on as the 13 families wallow in their own juices of the stew. It is that intense. And what I mean by that is that it's already done and over. We're in a new timeline, a new yuga, and everything that's unlike the high heart is coming up to be instantly Shattered and consumed with divine love, blazed the violet fire. What that brings up is all the old energies that are kind of being stirred in the pot. Randy Rhoads, today was her last day, and she brought all the things up since she started. And I mean, I can't go into all the things she played, other than all of it. She was in the military during the time right after the Gulf War. She didn't have to go to the first Gulf War. And Randy Rhoads is an Air Force pilot as well as mechanic. She can take apart an F-16 and put it back together with a crew of 15 people in one day. I mean, this is serious stuff. And she talked about what she learned being in the military, as well as all the folks that work with her. They're all ex-military, the folks she has on her staff. And they are connecting with Nicole Sandler. And I'll put her website up on ours called radioornot.com.
Oh, so is Nicole Sandler going to take that exact slot?
She's going to take that spot.
And keep going.
And keep going. And occasionally, maybe we will hear from Randy sitting there with Mr. Pele down there in Costa Rica.
With Pele, our astrologer.
Mr. Kaipacha.
Oh, is he going to, and you mean he's going to connect with her?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, everybody. Now,
she said today, I'm going to go find Mr. Pele.
Tom.
Tom.
The astrologer that we do on Saturdays.
Yeah.
This is good news, everybody. Power to the people.
And the way she played different things today concerning all...
Well, wait a minute. Is she going to come on the...
On the Nicole Sandler show.
And they can't say nothing about that to Nicole. And they can't fire Nicole.
No, they can't.
Oh, my. How come they could fire or tell Miss Randy to leave?
And it was with the production or the folks that she had. And now she doesn't have them.
Oh.
And... let's just say those folks are facing a major lawsuit for
doing what they did.
That's right.
Okay. And the one thing that Randy said today that was an update was that Christine Lagarde, the head of the IMF, that she just said it this way, she may show up, quote unquote, suicided. Like all those other banksters.
That's right.
And that it will be found out that she's a male reptilian and not a female human. And that's going to be quite an interesting trick.
Yeah.
That's going to be real interesting.
How is the coroner going to describe this to the media? This is going to be very interesting.
Well, they're going to have the DNA of both alive and dead, and it's going to be the same DNA. Oh, my gosh.
And I'm not saying, I'm
Which
just
means
saying.
That they're going to have to talk about shape-shifting and covers like that.
Yeah.
This is good. And then the other thing, there's...
And I'm not wishing this on anyone. I'm just saying these ones are so vicious. They're taking each other out. That's why I'm saying that Christine Lagarde, you know, the way Randy Rhoads brought it up is she's only an interim managing director of the IMF. They don't have a director because Mr. Dominique Strauss-Kahn is on the run, you know?
Well, he never got that job, though.
No, he didn't, but
he got thrown out of there.
He he, let's just say, through, you know, the fake money that's being passed around the planet, somehow he was able to bribe some lawyers or whoever to keep himself out of jail, yet it is only a interim moment. And
yeah, so everybody's going to have like no more dollars. And that means, you know, I don't know exactly how they're going to do this, but whatever dollars you had in your bank account, there will be no more dollars. They're going to move them out of there in flats, and they're going to lay them to rest, and then the rainbow bills are going to come into play. And this is going to be a learning curve for everybody. This will stop everything that we've ever thought we were going to be starting. In terms of whatever you've accrued, you'll be held clearly in the clear as this shift happens. And again, those who are not in the big programs will still be getting $10 million each. And I'm not sure what's going to happen in terms of, you know, what you thought you had and what you got now. If you had more than $10 million and you're getting the new one, all I know is that a month after this shift into Nisara, there will be a change in the, you know, the goods and services and the values of the products, because, again, $10 million will be equivalent to what $100 million was worth in the old system, because everything will be changed. The re-indexing, that's the word, a month after. And again, a $30,000 car brand new in the old system will be $3,000 brand new. So everything's changed, and that's going to be quite a torque. And, you know, that whole idea of I'm better than you and being able to buy your way through things. Okay, we're not going to say everything too much. We're going to play two things right now, but I would say one more thing, and that is Blackwater has been deployed to Ukraine. And 300 hired guns of Blackwater were found in the country in Kiev. And now there's some more found in Donetsk.
And these are the 13 families who have hired agent provocateurs to create World War III.
And the slant of the article's in the wrong dimension, in the wrong place. But we're just talking to you about it.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to just go to this one. We're going to play the speech. It's only 7 minutes that Barack Obama gave at Ground Zero. Oh, 9 minutes. Okay, here we go.
Okay.
Mayor Bloomberg, Governor Cuomo, honored guests, families of the fallen. In those awful moments, after the South Tower was hit, some of the injured huddled in the wreckage of the 78th floor. The fires were spreading. The air was filled with smoke. It was dark, and they could barely see. It seemed as if there was no way out. And then there came a voice, clear, calm, saying he had found the stairs. A young man in his 20s, strong, emerged from the smoke, and over his nose and his mouth, he wore a red handkerchief. He called for fire extinguishers to fight back the flames. He tended to the wounded. He led those survivors down the stairs to safety and carried a woman on his shoulders down 17 flights. Then he went back up all those flights, then back down again, bringing more wounded to safety. Until that moment when the tower fell. They didn't know his name. They didn't know where he came from, but they knew their lives had been saved by the man in the red bandana. Again, Mayor Bloomberg, distinguished guests, Mayor de Blasio, Governors Christie and Cuomo, and the families and survivors of that day. To all those who responded with such courage, on behalf of Michelle and myself and the American people, it is an honor for us to join in your memories, to recall and to reflect, but above all, to reaffirm the true spirit of 9/11. Love, compassion, sacrifice, and to enshrine it forever in the heart of our nation. Michelle and I just had the opportunity to join with others on a visit with some of the survivors and families, men and women who inspire us all, and we had a chance to visit some of the exhibits. And I think all who come here will find it to be a profound and moving experience. I want to express our deep gratitude to everybody who was involved in this great undertaking, for bringing us to this day, for giving us this sacred place of healing and of hope. Here at this memorial, this museum, we come together. We stand in the footprints of two mighty towers, graced by the rush of eternal waters. We look into the faces of nearly 3,000 innocent souls, men and women and children of every race, every creed, from every corner of the world. We can touch their names and hear their voices, and glimpse the small items that speak to the beauty of their lives. A wedding ring, a dusty helmet, a shining badge. Here, we tell their story so that generations yet unborn will never forget. Of co-workers who led others to safety, of passengers who stormed the cockpit, our men and women in uniform who rushed into an inferno, our first responders who charged up those stairs. A generation of service members, our 9/11 generation, who have served with honor in more than a decade of war. A nation that stands tall and united and unafraid, because no act of terror can match the strength or the character of our country. Like the Great Wall and bedrock that embrace us today, nothing can ever break us. Nothing can change who we are as Americans. On that September morning, Allison Crowther lost her son, Wells. Months later, she was reading the newspaper, an article about those final minutes in the towers. Survivors recounted how a young man wearing a red handkerchief had led them to safety. And in that moment, Allison knew. Ever since he was a boy, her son had always carried a red handkerchief. Her son, Wells, was the man in the red bandana. Wells was just 24 years old, with a broad smile and a bright future. He worked in the South Tower on the 104th floor. He had a big laugh, a joy of life, and dreams of seeing the world. He worked in finance, but he had also been a volunteer firefighter. And after the planes hit, he put on that bandana and spent his final moments saving others. 3 years ago this month, after our SEALs made sure that justice was done, I came to Ground Zero, and among the families here that day was Allison Crowther. And she told me about Wells and his fearless spirit. And she showed me a handkerchief like the one he wore that morning. And today, as we saw on our tour, one of his red handkerchiefs is on display in this museum. And from this day forward, all those who come here will have a chance to know the sacrifice of a young man who, like so many, gave his life so others might live. Those we lost live on in us, in the families who love them still, in the friends who remember them always, and in a nation that will honor them now and forever. And today it is my honor to introduce two women forever bound by that day, united in their determination to keep alive the true spirit of 9/11. Wells Crowther's mother, Allison, and one of those he saved, Ling Young.
Okay, that's the end. Now we're going to go and listen to Tom Hartman. He did a TED talk here, and this is real important too. So here we go. Okay, pull that over there, honey.
If you were to ask the average fourth grader or fifth grader if George Washington had fought the Revolutionary War for the purposes of freeing the interests of the billionaires and the corporate class in the UK, they would laugh at you. If you were to ask them if Abraham Lincoln fought the Civil War to free the corporations in America, they would go, what? Seriously, really? You know, it can't. Everybody thinks they understood what happened there. However, the U.S. Supreme Court in the last 35 years, more or less, has essentially said these two things. And I want to get to how our history brought us to this point, how we've been through three gilded eras, how we responded to the first two, and we find ourselves now in another one, and how we can most appropriately respond to that. Well, back in the late 90s, Louise and I moved to Vermont and bought an old house, and up in the attic found a 20-volume collection of the collected writings of Thomas Jefferson. It's only been printed once. It was published in 1909 on the 100th anniversary of the end of his presidency by the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Association. And I just sold a business. I had some time. I was working on a book. In fact, I was going to write a book called What Would Jefferson Do? And so I took about 2 years and I read most of these 20 volumes. It was his personal notes, his letters, his diaries, all kinds of stuff. And one of the things that I discovered was that that Revolutionary War that George Washington fought, that we thought was about no taxation without representation, and the Tea Act of 1773, which arguably was the trigger for the thing because it led directly to the Boston Tea Party, that that must have been some kind of tax hike that the colonists didn't like because they didn't want to be paying taxes without being represented. What I discovered in reading Jefferson's letters was that in fact, the Tea Act of 1773 was the biggest tax cut in the history of the world. The country at that time, and the country being an extension of England, was in a Gilded Age. It was in the tail end of a Gilded Age, but it was in a Gilded Age. There was a very small middle class. There were the plantation owners and the farmers and the mercantilists in North America. There was a fairly large working poor class, and there was this very small class of the very, very, very rich. Virtually all of them were gone by the end of the Civil War, as Jimmy Carter talks about in his new book on, or the Revolutionary War, excuse me, on that point. And most of them were in the UK. And the biggest corporation in the world was the East India Company. And they were sitting on £1 million of tea that they wanted to bring into the United States. And the biggest competition they had was these local tea shops that were all over the country, all up and down the East Coast, that were local entrepreneurial businesses. And they wanted to wipe them out. They wanted to pull a total Walmart, put them out of business. These tea shops were buying their tea from local importers who the British called smugglers. And so they gave this giant tax cut to the British East India Company, retroactively, handed them a huge pile of cash so that they could basically dump their tea in the American market and wipe out the entrepreneurs. So the Boston Tea Party was a revolt by the local small business people saying, enough already, enough of the Gilded Age, we are going to fight back. They didn't have a constitution they could amend at that time. They didn't even have a country. But they fought back. We are today, now, in essence, in another Gilded Age. Martin Gillens was on my program last week and was talking about this issue. He and Ben Page just completed a study, 21 years. They looked at almost 2,000 individual pieces of legislation at the federal level, and another study they looked at state legislation. And what they found was that over these last 21 years, legislation that had been proposed and passed was most likely to be passed if people in the 90th percentile income and above, essentially the top 1%, favored it. But if the 50th percentile, the average person, favored it, or the 10th percentile, the working poor, favored it, the probability of it being successfully passed was equivalent to noise. It was random. There was no, it didn't happen. In fact, he said majorities of the American public actually have little influence over the policies our government adopts. Instead, the decisions are being made, Gillen said, by the very wealthy, by special interest groups, and by very large corporations. In many cases, not even American-based corporations or American corporations that do business all over the world. They're making the legislation. And this is producing a genuine crisis. This is producing a new Gilded Age. We have wealth inequality like we'd never seen before. And B, a genuine crisis in democracy. People are not showing up. Latest study about the upcoming midterm elections indicated that people under 25, fewer than a quarter of them even intend to vote. Why bother? You know, it doesn't matter. People don't, I'm not represented. So, what do we do about this, and how have we confronted this in the past? Well, the last time we had a Gilded Age was back in after the Civil War, after Reconstruction, during the industrialization of the United States, the 1870s, the 1880s, the 1890s. And as Gilded Ages tend to do, where inequality gets massive, then the top just gets super concentrated, it led to a great crash in 1896, and this led to the populist and progressive revolt. And you found Teddy Roosevelt and then President Taft, two Republicans, oddly enough, taking on John Rockefeller and the Standard Oil Trust and taking them down, breaking them up into 26 individual pieces and going after the large corporations. They passed the Tillman Act in 1907, which made it a felony. You could actually go to prison if you were an officer or director of a corporation and you gave money to a candidate for federal office. They successfully amended the Constitution twice in response to this Gilded Age, and twice in response to this corruption, so that senators, instead of being appointed, they were basically being bought at the state level. Instead of being appointed by the states, were directly elected by the people, and that women could vote. And the consensus was that women would make the process more transparent and less corrupt. And so that happened. We had these two constitutional amendments, plus a whole variety of other laws that made, in many states, Oregon, for example, passed constitutional amendments that allowed the citizens to get around corrupted legislatures with the direct ballot initiative process. They were so emphatic about this at the end of the last Gilded Age. Keep in mind, the first Gilded Age, that ended with the American Revolution. The second Gilded Age ended with the populist progressive revolt and these two constitutional amendments and all these laws. They were so emphatic about it that virtually every state in the country passed a variation on the Tillman Act around the turn of the last century. And they were, notice how incredibly emphatic the state of Wisconsin was about this. This is an old Wisconsin law that Jane Ann Morris found, a historian and author on this stuff. And notice the word any in here. This is fascinating. This is the actual law. No corporation, and it's based on the Tillman Act, and it was legal back then. And in fact, they didn't take it off the books until 1954. No corporation doing business in the state shall pay or contribute or offer consent or agree or pay or to pay or contribute, directly or indirectly, any money, property, free service of its officers or employees or thing of value to any political party, organization, committee, or individual for any political purpose whatsoever, or for the purpose of influencing legislation of any kind, or to promote or defeat the candidacy of any person for the nomination, appointment, or election to any political office. I mean, this is damn emphatic, right? And they put some teeth into this. The penalty to this law said any officer, employee, agent, attorney, or other representative, in other words, lobbyist, of the corporation acting for and on behalf of such a corporation shall violate this act, shall be punished upon conviction by imprisonment in the state prison for a period of not less than 1 or more than 5 years. If it's a domestic that is based in the state corporation, it may be dissolved. They get the corporate death penalty. If it's a foreign or non-resident corporation, the right to do business in the state may be declared forfeit. That was how we responded to that Gilded Age. That's how we brought back a middle class in America, in part. I mean, there's a lot of other pieces to it. And it worked. The rest of my TED Talk from this new modern crisis. And this Gilded Age is a little more difficult to take on because the Supreme Court has said, essentially, that Abraham Lincoln did in fact fight the Civil War to free the slaves. There were three constitutional amendments after the end of the Civil War, the 13th, 14th, and 15th. 13th says you can't be a slave anymore. 14th says, regardless of your, you know, no matter what, everybody has the equal right, equal protection under the law. And the 15th says that former slaves can vote. But according to Justice John Paul Stevens, who recently left the court, this judge-made law, which has come into place in the last 35 years, more or less, and really emphatically in the last decade, that really, when the founders wrote the First Amendment, they weren't just talking about speech. They actually meant to protect money, that money is somehow magically found in the First Amendment. And when they wrote the 14th Amendment after the Civil War, they actually meant to protect the corporations when they were talking about persons who had equal protection rights. In a way, this started with the Buckley versus Vallejo decision. And in that case, they began dealing with the issue of the constitutionality of speech, of money as speech. Although they, at that point, they were calling giving money to political campaigns the regulation of conduct. It was still regulatable. A year later, in First National Bank versus Bilotti, it really started to fall apart. And by Citizens United and McCutcheon, campaign contributions had fully become speech, and corporations had fully become persons, First Amendment, 14th Amendment. In part, this was because Lewis Powell in 1971 was horrified in the late 60s. He was a tobacco lawyer in Virginia. And he saw the tobacco industry was coming under fire. But he saw other industries coming under fire as well. And in the 1960s, and he named specifically in this memo he wrote in 1971, he gave it to his friend Eugene Sindor, who was the head of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which up until that point had been entirely apolitical. He said, Rachel Carlson's book, Silent Spring, and Ralph Nader, he called out Ralph Nader by name, his book, Unsafe at Any Speed. These books had ignited a consumer movement in the late 60s. And this was a threat to corporate America. And he said, we have to get politically active. We have to get institutionally active. We have to take over the schools. We have to take over the legislatures. We have to take over the judiciary. We have to create think tanks and create public opinion. Business has to get its message out. It's not enough for the U.S. Chamber or any other business organization to just be a business organization anymore. We've got to get out there and be active. And you know, the U.S. Chamber read this memo, this was early 71, and said, okay. And out of this have come a whole variety of major institutions that have shaped public policy throughout the United States over the last 40 years in very significant ways, leading right to these dual Supreme Court doctrines, in many cases explicitly to these doctrines, that money is protected by the First Amendment, even though you don't find the word money in the First Amendment, and the corporations are protected by the 14th Amendment, even though you don't find that in the 14th Amendment. So what do we do about this? I mean, he was put on the Supreme Court 3 months after he wrote this memo by Richard Nixon. And once he got on the Supreme Court, he started arguing for these positions. And in the Buckley case in 76, and in the Bilotti case in 75, excuse me, and the Bilotti case in 76, in Boston versus Bilotti, the Supreme, you know, up until that point, Massachusetts had a law that said corporations can't put money into political events. First National Bank of Boston was throwing money into a political event that had nothing to do with banking. Frank Bilotti, the attorney general, came in, tried to shut him down. They took this to the Supreme Court, and Powell and his buddies said, oh yeah, they've got a right to free speech. It's a corporation. William Rehnquist wrote the dissent. Said, this is crazy, amazingly enough. So now we have this judge-made law. No legislator in any state in the United States has ever voted to say corporations are people and money is speech. Never. No governor has ever signed such legislation. No legislator in the United States House of Representatives or Congress in the history of the country has ever suggested such a thing. No president has ever signed it. In fact, go back and read the 1887 Grover Cleveland's annual address to the nation, his State of the Union address, in which he talks about the iron heel, the iron boot, the iron heel of corporations being upon the necks of average citizens. This was back when, it was the year after the first time that corporations as persons was argued before the Supreme Court. So what do we do about this? Well, there is a very clear suggestion to fix this judge-made law. It's the 28th Amendment, the next amendment to the Constitution. It's been introduced into Congress by Richard Nolan and Mark Pocan, among others. And it says a few things. It's very short, very brief. Basically, the rights protected by the Constitution of the United States are rights of natural persons only, right? We the people, not we the corporations. Artificial entities, corporations, shall have no rights under the Constitution. They have privileges, of course, but no rights under the Constitution and are subject to regulation by we the people through federal, state, or local law. Number one, so no more corporate personhood. Number two, no more the Supreme Court saying that money is speech. The judiciary, this is the Supreme Court, shall not construe the spending of money to influence elections to be speech under the First Amendment. Very simple. This is how we get around it. Now, the objection that I hear from people to this is, wait a minute. There are 27 amendments to the Constitution. There have been over 29,000 proposed since 1793, when it was first ratified. And, you know, good luck. Well, the reality is, at the end of the last Gilded Age, we got a couple really fast, and they were very successful because the people's dander were up. People were upset. People understood the problem, and they pushed it through. We had a similar situation in the United States, a similar crisis. It wasn't a crisis of the Gilded Age, but it was a similar crisis back in 1971. You had young people going off to Vietnam and dying, and they weren't old enough to vote. They were old enough to be drafted, but not to vote. Barry McGuire's song, "The Eve of Destruction," you're old enough to vote, but not for old enough to die, but not for voting, hit the number one Billboard, and America was animated. And so the 26th Amendment was proposed. It was proposed into Congress in March of 1971. It was ratified on July 1st, 1973. From the time it got dropped into Congress, Congress has to pass it, then three quarters of the states have to ratify it. It took 3 months and 8 days. It is possible to amend the Constitution. This is the one that lowered the voting age from 21 down to 18. It is possible to get a constitutional amendment when we the people say, hey, enough. We've had enough already. Which means that the job now, if we want to end this Gilded Age, and we want to put the power of the United States government back to the people, so the people actually want to vote because they're actually represented. If we want to do it, we have to wake up America. We have to tell people what has happened. We have to tell people what can be done. And this is, there's many other possible solutions. I think this is the cleanest and most powerful. And we have to be waking up everybody we know.
Okay, we'll finish the last of it when we come back, and we'll see you at the top of the next hour on BBS Radio, best radio in the universe. And for this hour, we'll go to 213-342-3000. And the pin tonight is 23, 23, 23 pound, and we'll have a little discussion and cussing going on for the next hour. And we love you all. Sat Nam for now on the radio.